Thanks, Eileen. Thank you very much. And good afternoon on this Thursday afternoon. How are you? 515-51 ray at rte.ie. Wouldn't normally, you know, comment on what happens on Liveline, but as it happens, I've had chats and chats and chats today with women in my life, people who work on the team, and my wife, Jenny. And it's all on the back of Sarah Everard's disappearance and suspected murder. And it's a difficult one. It's men's violence against women, isn't it? And of course, as men, we try to fix things. That's why a lot of rows happen in the home, because a woman wants a sympathetic ear, and as a man you go, well, how can I fix it? How can I fix it? But they don't want everything fixed. They want just a sympathetic ear. So I was chatting and chatting and tried to understand. And what we probably don't understand, men listening, is that women live in constant fear. And it's difficult for us to understand that. It's difficult for us to understand that you can't go out for a run after it gets dark. It's difficult for us to understand that when you leave the pub, when the pubs were open, that you had to try and plot how you were going to get home. That if you got into a taxi, that you'd take a picture of the registration plate of the taxi driver. That when you got out of the taxi, that you'd try and, even if there was nobody in the house, you'd make it as if there was somebody in the house. It's difficult for us to understand that, you know, carrying a set of keys in your hand to use as a weapon if you're attacked. It's impossible for us to understand if you're walking down the street and somebody's walking behind you, that immediately that person is a threat. And I don't know how you fix these things as a man. And there's no doubt that the majority of men, 99.9% of men, are never going to be violent to women. And that's it. But this fear that women live with every day is there because men, certain men, are violent against women. And those men are, even if they're listening now, they're not going to change their behaviour because I asked them to, or because women asked them to. They're probably going to perpetrate crimes anyway. So how do we, and here's the word again, fix it. How do we fix it? And I remember talking to Tom Maher. Tom Maher lost his wife, Gillian. Remember that horrific case back in 2014? She was walking home one night in an Australian city and she was attacked and murdered. And Tom went on to work with White Ribbon. And White Ribbon was an organisation set up in America or Canada, I think back in the 90s. And their idea was that in conversations around violence against women, that most of the time, it's all about women, what the women were doing, and what is never or rarely considered is the man and men, and how do we prevent men from doing these crimes? And I remember interviewing Tom a couple of times, and he talked about the ethos behind White Ribbon, and it was about men calling out casual misogyny, casual sexism. You know, in the pub, if some guy in your company, you know, comments on somebody's, you know, short dress or whatever, that you say, ah, no, leave it out. And that we have to start in the little things before we can, you know, deal with the big things. And I'm embarrassed. Like, here's a list of things that I've got together today from women. These are things that they do, right? We mentioned some of them already. Carry car keys in your hand so that they can be used as a weapon. Do not walk, go for a walk after dusk or dark ever. Do not walk to your car at night alone. Do not take public transport alone at night because of the walk from the bus to the house. Use WhatsApp live location. I didn't know that existed. And that's where everybody in your WhatsApp group will know exactly where you are. You can activate that on WhatsApp. Text when you get home. If you're walking home alone, take a photo of taxi plate ID if in a taxi alone. Use a taxi from an app instead of off the street. So it's all of these things have to be considered if you're a woman. Open your door very quickly when you do get home. Ring a friend on the phone to say you're on the way so they talk to you on the phone. Even pretend to be on the phone. Getting off public transport at a different stop than needed as there's more light or more people around. If you're in a group getting a taxi, the one who lives alone gets dropped off first and the taxi man will wait until she gets in home before leaving. Get somebody to walk you home. Travel in groups, three is the best, at least three. So lads, What can we do? What do you think we can do to make it better for the women in our lives? How do we in some way soften this? How do we get rid of the fear? Or is it a fact of life? Is it always going to be there? Is it a fact of life that there will always be men who will be violent towards women? And is it, and I don't know the answers to any of these questions, is it that the fear, this fear and these precautions that women take constantly, that they're there for a good reason, that they're hardwired into women to protect them from these evils, these evil men who are out there? Is that it? How do we change? How do we change? And there's no point in getting, you know, up on your high horse and saying, well, it's not every man. I'm fine. We know that. We know that's a given. We know all that. That doesn't change how women think, how they feel, how they're full of fear every time when they go out, how my wife calls a certain part of UCD rapist alley, although nobody has ever been raped there. But the fear is that if, you know, that might happen. That when I was out running in the dark on those winter mornings, that she couldn't because she's a woman. And so I don't know the answer to any of those questions, but if you can enlighten me in any of those, please, 51551 or redrte.ie. I always feel threatened when a man walks close to me, walks up behind me on the street or footpath. I usually stay on the edge of the footpath and let him pass by. At least if anything goes wrong, I can try to get away quickly, get help. I suppose if men are aware at night, if they're walking behind a woman, that, you know, this is going to fill them with fear, and they might adjust their behaviour accordingly, go over to the other side of the road, or I don't know, what do you do? I've pretended to be talking on the phone lots of times when I thought I was in danger, says that person, and educate men from a young age. From day one, not acceptable to treat women the way they do. Simple education. And that starts in the home. That starts with parents. Yes, it will always be there. It always has been. No man will understand, says Kate. 51551 ray@rte.ie. I see there, and like, you know, people slag off TikTok, but they did a thing there a few months ago. They asked people on TikTok what would they do if there were no men on earth for 24 hours. It's sort of not surprising, really. Here are some of the responses. So if there are no men on earth for 24 hours, go on walks at night. This is what women would do. Wear whatever I want, says somebody else. Not look behind me when I walk alone at night. Be more trusting. Terrible indictment on us men, lads. I we have to do something about it. 51551 ray@rte.ie. Good afternoon. Second time this week for Sinead O'Connor. No man's woman, no harm in that. As in playing two Sinead O'Connor songs in a week. 51551 ray@rte.ie. I will always make an imaginary phone call to say I'll be home in 10 or 20 minutes as soon as I get in a taxi. And somebody says, brighter street lighting would help, not only in the towns and city centres, also more CCTV cameras. And a dad texts in to say, I think you forget that any male with daughters goes through this fear every night they go out, as we do understand how many head cases there are out there. And it's even more frightening when you have teenage daughters who think they know it all and rebuke your offers of picking them up every night. As a young 24-year-old man, I've seen girls actively be afraid of men. I think it's time for men to stop saying, not all men. Stop your not all men hashtags. Stop being triggered because you aren't like that. Start supporting the women in and out of your life. Start holding all men accountable. Start to speak up, because it won't be all men until we're all accountable. Yeah. My 28-year-old daughter lives in Melbourne, and often because of the time difference calls me on her way home from a night out. I always keep her on the phone until I know she's home and safe. The worry never stops for me and for my daughter. I carry a deodorant spray or perfume in my hand and my keys in the other, even during the day, if walking on my own. Men jogging towards me are terrifying. I'm not going to say that a man jogging never harmed a woman, but like, it's, you're probably more concerned with doing your 4 miles and getting a mile done in 9 minutes than anything else. You see, There are always going to be men who will be violent against women, and it doesn't matter what we do, it doesn't matter how early we start the education, although that's important, it doesn't matter how much we call out casual misogynism and sexism, misogyny I should say, there are going to be men, and that's the nature of it, and men in the main are stronger, as in physically stronger than women, so they can overcome them, and that's, you know, that's something we can't change. But it would be great to live in a world where women didn't live in constant fear. And I don't know how we achieve that world or how we work towards achieving that world. More mundane things. Our quiz of today. Yes. Today being the 11th of March, we've cobbled together 10 questions on events that happened on this day over the years. And we're looking for two people to answer 5 questions each. And we've a great prize. Yes, it comes courtesy of Electric Ireland, who are launching their new smart meter prize plans, helping you manage your electricity usage for the better. That means no more estimated bills or submitting your meter reading. You can search Electric Ireland smart meters to find out more about smart meters and their benefits. And thanks to the people in Electric Ireland, whoever wins the quiz today gets a new 50-inch HD smart TV. It's great the way that's put new in. No, a second-hand one. No, it's a brand new 50-inch HD smart TV to be won today. 2 people after 4 o'clock, 5 questions each. But first, you have to answer our qualifying question, which is this. Can you name the current Minister for Finance? Can you name the current Minister for Finance? 1850-715-100. That's 1850-715-100. And we may be talking to you after 4 o'clock.
The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Yeah, 51551. Now, depending on which way you look at it, today or tomorrow is a big anniversary. It was the Thursday before St. Patrick's Day that Leo Varadkar made that speech. And it was the day Thursday before St. Patrick's Day that the WHO declared coronavirus as a pandemic. So it's been a mad year, or even 364 days. And we got to talk to Patrice and Paul Hosford way back during lockdown, because they had given birth to little Tom tomorrow last year. And Patrice and Paul are back on the line. Good afternoon to you both.
Hi, Ray.
Good afternoon, Ray.
Did I get those facts right? It is tomorrow or today is the birthday?
Today's the birthday.
Oh, today's the birthday. Sorry. So you it was the 11th then that you you went in and gave birth to Tom, Patrice, and then Leo made the speech that day and announced that the schools would be closed from the next day. Wasn't that it?
That's it. So we kind of were, I suppose, one of the last few that kind of got the sense of having a normal experience in the hospital when having a baby, that you weren't kind of waiting for it to get to a delivery suite before your partner could join you. So we kind of got in just in time, because I was due to be induced on the 12th. So yeah, we said we really did just get in on time, because on the 12th, when we were in on the ward the next day, and like that, partners were still allowed in. They changed it. They came around and told Paul, once you leave, you won't be let back in till I'm discharged. And yeah, that was when we kind of went, oh, this is serious. Like, before that, we knew there was changes in the visiting restrictions where they weren't going to let the partners in for outpatient appointments or scans and stuff like that. But you kind of naively think, oh, that's only for the first 2 weeks.
Yeah.
It's bad, but like, it's only a week or two. And then they suddenly changed it and they were like, no, once you're in having the baby, they'll let you in for once you're in the delivery suite. But after that, partners or the nominated person would be sent home.
Yeah, we forget it got very serious very quickly, didn't it?
Very quickly. Like, yeah. I remember, I think it was the Friday before we had Tom, where they changed the restrictions that it would only be the nominated person would be allowed in when you had the baby. And we were a bit like upset, like I wouldn't get to see my mom and dad. But we were like, oh, look, it's a day or two in hospital. That's not that bad. And my sister-in-law said when she had her second child, it was the swine flu and the same thing. And she's like, look, it sounds awful, but when you're in the moment, it's not too bad.
Yeah.
And that's what we were comparing it to, swine flu. You're like,
yeah,
that didn't really affect us at all. And now you're like, wow, this is a year later and not a whole lot has changed.
Yeah. And Paul, you're a journalist, so you appreciate, you know, the big stories in the world. And little Tom's birthday now is going to be plagued with anniversaries, isn't he, of the announcement of a pandemic and lockdown, etc.
This is it. I probably talk myself down here, my abilities as a journalist, but I actually missed the announcement that it was a pandemic because we were in the delivery suite. And it wasn't until I got home that night. So I remember kind of collapsing into the bed at about midnight because Tom was born about half seven. And they asked or politely shunted you out after a couple of hours.
Yeah.
And I remember just looking at Twitter and seeing that the WHO at their afternoon conference, a press conference, had upgraded to a global pandemic. And even then, like Patrice said, you were like, what's a global pandemic in this day and age? It'll be a couple of weeks. And, you know, in the end, it wasn't till the summer that Tom really met his grandparents or his aunts and uncles. So,
yeah, and we've spoken to loads of people, and obviously everybody's experienced this differently. And I can see the benefits for you two in that, you know, this very special time with your first baby, and we hear about bonding, and you were there and available, both of you, to bond, Paul.
Yeah, like one of the things, and I've said this a few times to people throughout the year, for me, is that when Patrice was on maternity leave, I would have been in normal times in and out of town. And the thing is, look, you know yourself that journalism, and particularly at that time, we were covering the likes of government formation and then the pandemic through the summer. So there are long hours, but there was 2 hours of the day that I was getting automatically because I was mostly working from home. And that means that, you know, I was available to help with bedtime or with you know, him in the mornings or just even to ease that load a little bit. But for me, it meant 2 extra hours a day with him as he develops all of these things. And one of the things that people don't really tell you about kids is that they develop in these really sudden bursts. You know, they kind of store up their personality, and then all of a sudden they have new tricks and new things that they're doing. And so I didn't miss any of that in his first year. And for that, look, the last year has been really hard for everybody. But personally, for me, I'll probably look back on this year with him and say, look, that's the one good thing that we were able to take out of it.
Yeah. What's he like, Patrice? What sort of personality does the little man have?
Absolute divilment. His favourite thing is to cause trouble, as you can hear him shoot, because I'm not throwing the balloon quick enough to him.
Right, okay.
But like, he's so funny. He's full of cuddles. Like, his favourite thing is just to crawl up to you and wrap his arms around your neck and give you the biggest hug. And even like, most of his experience of like his grandparents and aunts and uncles has been through a phone, just with the way things are even now still. He kisses the phone. He gives him big smiles. He's like learning tricks. I know he sounds like a dog when I'm saying that, but he's reacting to what we're asking him to do. And he's discovering the world. Like today, he discovered Alexa. Like it's beside our bed, and he just thought this. He's obviously been watching us where we're kind of asking her to play songs. And this morning, he just spent the whole time leaning forward, trying to talk to us to get it to play a song.
Yeah.
Now, he hasn't quite figured out how to say Alexa yet, but give it time.
Of course, he's oblivious, isn't that? And I suppose that's the brilliant thing about babies. Like, and that's why they're very grounding, because, you know, little Tom is oblivious to what's going on in the world. As long as he has mammy and daddy there and he poos and he gets fed, that's happy out.
That's it, 100%. Like, he knows no different. And we've been lucky he's got to go to creche, so he's had some social interactions with other babies.
Yeah.
So I don't feel he's missing out on that side of things. But, like, anyone who's met him or got to see him, they said is he's a very happy baby. And I suppose that's all you can ask for.
Yeah,
whether it's a pandemic or normal times, you just want your baby to be seen as happy and content. And hopefully he stays like that.
So Paul, balloons there. So there is a party. Is it ongoing or what's is there a
well,
cake?
Well, yeah. We just brought him home and we went. So I went and got him from creche. We'd gone and got him one of these Mylar balloons, and he came in and had an absolute freak attack the second he saw it, and I had to take it out of the room. So the effort wasn't appreciated as much.
Yeah. Hey, you, as a journalist, looking back at the year, you know, what was the big story? I know you were involved in Golfgate, weren't you?
Well, just that I was involved in reporting it.
Yes,
not
that's what
not
I'm saying.
That I was in the room.
Yes. I should have specified, but yeah. Go on.
Yeah. So I suppose that and it's hard to, we were talking about this the other day as a team in the Examiner. We were saying that everything that you do at the moment just has COVID at least running through it. And, you know, as a journalist, it gets kind of it gets not boring, but you know, you're covering the same story again and again and again.
Yeah.
But people are really interested because it affects them in a very, very real way. You know, it's not one of those abstracts that, you know, you think, how does this affect people? And you have to explain it. This affects people because they can't leave their homes. They can't see their families. And so, you know, the individual stuff, the Golfgate and some of the larger announcements, you do feel like that they were major milestones. But when we look back between this day last year and today and whenever this ends, all we'll talk about is the pandemic and the things that we took from it.
Yeah. And you just started your job in the Examiner at the beginning of March last year. Is it my imagination, or is there something happening in the Examiner? There's an energy around it. Is there?
Yeah, well, I like to think so. Yeah. I think that Tom Fitzpatrick, our editor, started the beginning of last year, and a couple of new faces came in, but there's just a great team there. And I think that's really all it comes down to is having really, really good journalists who want to tell really good stories.
And Patrice, what do you do?
I work in the world of AML within Royal Bank of Canada in Dublin. So thankfully, it's meant that I could work from home once my maternity leave ended and came back swinging. In fairness, it's been all go since I came back, and I thankfully love it. But thankfully, COVID hasn't had too much of an effect on it other than we're working from home and kind of, you don't, I've a few new members on my team that I've never met.
I'm just wondering because, you know, the birth of Tom coincided with beginning the lockdown, that when eventually we do come out, and we will come out of lockdown, it's going to be particularly for people like you, because your world has changed quite considerably with your first child, and then it's been this way for a year, and then when we come out into normal, it's going to be challenging enough, is it, Patrice?
I think so. Like I had said to Paul when this all kicked off, I was like, I don't know if this is going to hit me till I go back to work. And my naivety at the time was, will I be out of lockdown by the middle of summer and we'd be done with it, and it probably just won't hit me in it kind of when I look back on it. But it did hit me when I went back to work, because that was my first taste of, I suppose, the new normal of what life is like with having a baby and working. But when we go back to non-lockdown times, it's going to be even, I say, another shock to the system, because I'd be thinking about a commute. I would be kind of working out if both Paul and I need to work late, have we got someone to collect them?
Yeah.
Where now at the moment, you're just, I'm at home, I grab them from creche, and if I have to log back in the evening, you log back in the evening, and it's, you're not kind of having to plan too far ahead.
He's a great pair of lungs in him.
Yeah, I'm not even sure what he's given out about. I think he's just discovered he can make that volume.
I just before I let you go, is there a plan to, you know, a big party to introduce Tom to the extended family and friends?
We had initially hoped that we had done a small civil ceremony back in 2019 when we got married. We had to postpone our big wedding, and the plan was that was going to be the big introduction to everyone in September last year.
Right, okay.
And that was pushed out because of COVID, and it was meant to be the end of May this year. And again, we were like, look, we'll make a big fuss. We'll do something for Tom, and we'll do everything properly. And that's been pushed out again because of COVID. So we're hoping we don't have to wait till next year before we can have a big party for him. But we'll have to wait and see. But I think everyone's saying that he'll be like the Queen. He'll get two birthdays.
Yeah, not more than two now, because, you know, the little princess who wanted more birthdays and eventually became boring. You know that story. Well, you'll get to that because you're a new parent. Yeah. Okay. So enjoy the rest of the day. Happy birthday, Tom. Patrice and Paul, we'll talk to you again. Thanks very much. Thank you. See you. Bye. Bye. 51551 RadRT.ie. More texts coming in. I'll get to a few of those now. Let me see, go back up to the top there. As a parent of a 20-year-old special needs young woman who we are trying to make as independent as possible, we worry every day when she leaves the house. That's during the day. There isn't a hope of her going out at night, says that person. And from a husband, I'm a Dublin husband at home waiting for my wife to come home from work to offer her the biggest apology I can for always dismissing some of those concerns, like locking the car doors when in traffic. And why even when out walking, she would be anxious in certain areas which weren't too well lit. It's not just her being over anxious. I will now be more tuned into such feelings, says that person. And I have two daughters, one 25 and the other 21. And as a dad, I plead with them to be aware of their surroundings. There are bad people in this world as there are good. Well, the good thing is that there are more good than bad. People talk about it's my right to do whatever I want, but we don't live in utopia. That's, yeah. This is a huge issue. To be fair, most men are not a threat, but the fear is still there. If I'm walking the dog, especially at night, I'm inclined to keep pace with other women who are walking, especially younger women, just in effect, keeping an eye out for them. My daughters always ring me loudly when they get into a taxi. Oh, so they talk loudly to make sure the taxi driver knows. And this isn't about taxi drivers, it's about men in general. Even in daylight hours, I will never walk alone anywhere that I cannot see other people for fear of being attacked. This includes walking in a park, on a bench, in a forest, on the mountains, along a canal, etc. There are so many things women cannot do alone due to the constant fear of attack by men. Yeah, I see the head of the Metropolitan Police saying there that she said it was thankfully incredibly rare for a woman to be abducted from the capital streets. And you see, fears don't have to be based in statistics or facts. That's human nature. A man followed me into my hall door one night. I put my key in the door, and when I went to close the door, there he was. I got an awful fright and let him have it, screaming abuse at him, using language I didn't know I knew. He screamed at me and ran away. I was both furious and frightened. Whoa. And as a public service worker who drives the last bus from town, I am glad that there are CCTV cameras on the bus for everyone's sake. I don't feel comfortable when there is a girl who is on her own and she's the last one on the bus. All I want to do is to get her where she wants to go, says that person. And there's more on that. There are far more good men than creatures. But if I had to ask one thing, I'd ask the good men to please start paying attention to other men, please. We women have carried that burden alone for so long. Well, there you go. That's thanks for that, Helen. So you're asking us to pay attention to other men and to be suspicious of them on your behalf. That's good. I like that. 5151 ray@rte.ie.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551, The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
A quick reminder, we're looking for two people to come on for our quiz of today after 4 o'clock. A great prize, courtesy of Electric Ireland, a new 50-inch HD smart TV. And the qualifying question is, can you name the current Minister for Finance? 1850 715 900. That's 1850 715 900. The current Minister for Finance. Now, how many times have I said it, and how many times have you said it, that our perception of time is all over the place because of the pandemic? You know, was it last week? Was it a month ago? Was it 2 months ago? And it's a scientific fact that our perception of time has been affected by lockdown. Dr. Ruth Ogden is an associate professor specialising in experimental psychology at Liverpool John Moores University, and she has studied our perception of time during COVID, and she's on the line now. How are you doing, Ruth?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Good. Good to talk to you. Now, first talk to us a little bit generally about time and how we perceive it.
So we tend to perceive time, the idea is that we have some sort of clock in our brain, and this clock accumulates time as events go on. And we use this clock to judge how long things last for or how long we've been doing something for.
Right. And how good are we at it? How good are our brains?
Well, it depends on what we're judging. I mean, sometimes we can be very good. If we're focusing on time and we're judging a short duration, we can be pretty accurate. But it's very, very common for us to experience distortions to time, particularly as our emotions change and the activities that we perform change.
Okay. I remember learning years ago that we our perception as we live through it is different to our memory of it.
That's exactly right.
Right, okay.
That's exactly right.
Will you explain that for our listeners?
So what we tend to find is that when we're looking back on our lives and we're thinking about how long something lasted for or how long we were doing something for, our brain almost does a little trick where it looks at how many memories we've formed. If we formed loads of new memories, then our brain assumes that we were doing this thing for a long time.
Okay.
If we've not formed very many memories, then our brain assumes we were doing something for a very short period of time. And normally that's probably quite a good rule for how long things have lasted for. But you can imagine that in the pandemic, where life is thrown upside down, this might not be such a good rule anymore because of the changes in what we've been doing.
Okay, so what have you found then about how the pandemic pandemic has affected our perception of time?
So we've looked at how the pandemic affects our perception of time in the UK, and we've looked at it in Argentina as well. What we found in both situations is that perception of time has been really influenced by the pandemic. So only 20% of the people that we surveyed reported experiencing a normal passage of time during the pandemic, so that time was experienced in the same way as before lockdown. About half of people who experienced distortion to time felt like it was passing more quickly than normal. Okay. And about half of people felt like it was passing more slowly than normal. And for me, that was the really surprising thing, because my lockdown experience with three children has been that there are more than 24 hours in the day. There's more like 240 hours in the day. Yeah. And that was what actually motivated me to do the study. Okay. Because I couldn't imagine that other people were experiencing
when is this
different.
Day going to be over? Yeah, yeah, I hear what you're saying. I've been there. Yes, yeah, yeah. So 40% said slower than normal, 40% said faster than normal.
Yeah.
So then you have to find out why. Why, yes. Oh, why is this the case? Go on.
So this is it. So we wanted to, like, for me, I want a fast lockdown. So I want to understand what it is that makes lockdown fast and lockdown slow.
Okay.
And there are a few key things that popped out. So what we tended to find was that older people, particularly over 65, they were more likely to experience a slow lockdown. Now, obviously, there's not much we can do about our age, so that's possibly not that helpful for us if we want to speed up our lockdown. People who experienced a fast lockdown, though, one of the key things was that they were satisfied with social interaction. So the interactions they were having were bringing them joy and they felt fulfilled by them. The people who had a slow lockdown, they weren't socially satisfied. Right. It didn't matter how much social contact they had. It was really about how satisfied they were
the
with
quality
the social contact.
Of...
It's the quality, not the quantity.
Right.
So there's no point in living with someone that you don't want to talk to. That's not going to help your lockdown.
Right.
It's much better to just see somebody occasionally who you love to spend time with, be it online or in person, depending on the rules, and that will help your lockdown to pass more quickly.
Aha, so it's the quality of social interactions that dictates our perception of time. Well,
in the lockdown,
yeah.
Definitely.
In the lockdown, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. The other thing is, it's back to what we were talking about at the start, it's like when you're waiting for something, you know, you're waiting in a doctor's surgery or something like that, and time seems to slow down to like just an interminable pace, you know, that everything, you know, time expands. So
yes.
That it's like being on a treadmill. I say, if you want to expand time, go on a treadmill. You know,
most definitely.
You look at your watch and it's only 2 minutes gone. And the other thing is that if you have a very busy day, the day seems to go like that. So will you explain that to us?
So what you're describing there is the effect of attention to time and temporal importance.
Right.
So sayings like time flies when you're having fun and time drags when you're bored, they're really true. We find that in our studies all the time. So when people are bored, time is very important to them. They're watching their clocks, they're looking at their watches because they want the period of boredom to be over. So that's like on the treadmill. If you're not enjoying it, all you want to do is get off, and you're looking at your watch to find out when you can get off.
Yeah.
When we pay an abnormal amount of attention to time,
okay,
that makes it really slow down for us, because normally we're just sort of monitoring time in the background. So then you get the reverse when you're happy, you're enjoying yourself, or when you're very busy, you don't have the capability to look at time. You're not interested in time because you've got other things to think about, and that helps time to pass very quickly.
Okay, I was interested to read that you say that we know we have a Monday feeling, we have a Tuesday feeling, we have a Wednesday feeling. Like today is Thursday, we're close to the weekend, so there's a definite atmosphere, and that these things are important for us.
Yeah, I think they're really important. They're what I call temporal markers.
Right.
So I think if you think about people, we all like to think that we're very spontaneous, but actually most of us aren't. We live these incredibly routine lives. We go out at the same time every day. We eat at the same time every day. And we do the same things on set days. This is all before coronavirus, obviously.
Yes.
So you might have your yoga on a Tuesday. You might go to church on a Sunday. And all these activities, they tell us what day it is without us having to look at a calendar. So we know it's a Tuesday because we're doing Tuesday things.
Right.
But they also hold us in time in the day. So you can kind of know what time it is by how you're feeling and what you're doing. If you're a bit hungry, it's nearly lunchtime, things like that. Now, the coronavirus has blown that out the window. We don't need to get up at specific times. We don't do our hobbies on specific days because we can't do anything anymore. Yes. So we've really lost all the little cues in our life and markers in our life that help to keep us in time.
Can that have a detrimental effect on our mental health?
Well, I think that it almost certainly would do.
Right.
So in one of our more recent studies that we've done about the second lockdown in England, we found that one of the things that made the lockdown pass slowly was depression. And the higher someone's level of depression, the slower their lockdown was. So I think that when we've lost all our activities, when we've lost our routine, it increases our boredom, it increases our isolation. We've got more time to think about, you know, how unpleasant the situation is for many people. And that really contributes towards our mental health.
So what can people take from that then?
So I think that if you feel like you're struggling with losing track of what day it is, what time it is, or generally with your mental health, one of my top tips would be to try and create some structure for yourself. So try and create a routine within each day, but also across the days. Working from home makes it really hard to get that definition between the week and the weekend. They all merge into one. Mm. And it would be really good if people could try and say to themselves, well, my weekdays are going to be Mondays to Fridays. These are when I'm going to do work. At the weekend, I'm going to do different things so that I have that definition, so that I have that break in my life.
Yeah, and people will slag me off when I say this, but even dressing for work, even though you're at home, might be something. Because like I put on a certain, you know, clothes to come in here, and then when I go home, the first thing I do is take them off, and that makes me feel sort of lighter and better. That shouldn't be the case, but that's
the way it is. It's a change of state, isn't it?
Yes,
that we sort of are the things that we dress ourselves as, and if we're in work mode, it would be nice to be wearing something different to when we're in relaxation mode. And that, again, helps.
So that's another thing, isn't it? That's another thing when you're working from home and you don't change.
Yes.
And then you're wearing the same thing during the week as you're at the weekend. So there's no demarcation.
And if you're anything like me and you have no spare capacity in your house, you're working on your sofa in your living room, and then you spend your evening on your sofa in your living room. So you don't even have the small change of scenery that you might have from working in a different room or going to the office or something like that.
It's fascinating. I'm fascinated. Do we have an area, a little part of our brain that deals with time?
So that's such a good question. And the answer is that we don't really know yet.
All right.
So there's loads of studies which have looked at which areas of the brain are responsible for time. And what we tend to find is that there's lots of areas that light up if we put people in a scanner when they're doing time perception tasks. I think if you think about time, you don't ever really experience it without something else. So you have to experience
unless you're on the other task on the cube, where you have to, you know, you have to calculate 30 seconds and then press the big red button.
Well, exactly. So that person is probably thinking about something to enable them to time the 30 seconds. You're always experiencing time through an object or through a feeling or an interaction. So what we see in some studies is that the individual bits of the brain that are responsible for those activities are responsible for some time processing for those types of stimulus.
Yeah.
So it's very widespread. It's very diverse around the brain.
And we didn't even start talking about daylight and nighttime and all that sort of thing and how that affects your perception of time.
Yeah, so we have people who consider themselves to be morning people and some people who consider themselves to be night owls or evening people. And again, I think with this disruption to routine, all those things are going to add together to help to confuse us about what's going on with time.
Right, okay.
And I suppose the key question is whether this will return to normal when life gets back to normal. Will we feel more anchored in time?
Well, of course we will, but it'll be like a massive jet lag, won't it, for a while?
It will. Yeah.
So your advice, the top takeaway tip from this is put structure on your life if you don't have it.
Put structure in your life and try and maximise interaction with people that you love.
Okay, that's brilliant advice. Dr. Ruth Ogden, Associate Professor specialising in Experimental Psychology at Liverpool John Moores University. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye now.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Tweet at Radio Ray RTE. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Or 51551 for your texts. Jean has been on. She says, I'm over 70. I've booked the trend for my age cohort. I feel this year has gone by very quickly. Maybe it's because I'm aware of the relatively few years I have left. Well, that's interesting. That's Jean there. And on what we were talking about earlier on, great point made by that young man about calling on all men to defend strongly any woman who has been spoken of in a derogatory manner by any male. I'm 63 and grew up on a farm with four brothers. I went to boarding school that had a mixed day school and travelled a lot throughout my life. So I observed and experienced male attitudes to the ladies in different cultures. I remember being really cross with all the mammies of the world for not showing their sons by example, respect and basic good manners to every person, man or woman. Anyway, it is really good to start talking about this, as Nora in Cork. And just heard show, I don't use public transport anymore, especially in the evening. I drive and stay sober. Just a couple of things I do if I'm meeting friends in a town or a city. I use proper car parks, reverse into your car parking spot. Never park beside a van, never park beside a wall. Always park in the middle of a row. Before I get in my car, I check my back seat and floor area. Get into my car quickly and lock my car straight away. Volkswagen are great. They have lights in their footwells, so it's easy to see. I also think and have thought of quite some time self-defense should be taught in all schools and not just for girls. Thanks for highlighting a very difficult issue for women, Michelle. Now, lads, listen to that. Do you hear that? All the things that Michelle has to do, just all the things she has to think of, and that's for every woman. Reverse, don't park beside a van, check the back seat. Like, these are things that we never have to consider as men. So let's start changing the world for women. Any suggestions, keep them coming in, 51551 or ray@rte.ie. We received a handwritten letter into the Ray D'Arcy Show, RTE Donnybrook, Dublin 4, from Tom Hand. And Tom is on the line. How are you doing, Tom?
Hi, Ray. How's it going?
Good. It's all Tom's today.
Tom.
Yeah. Will I read the letter here? The handwriting isn't too bad. Dear Ray, I'm hoping that you can help me to find a relation of a Jack McLaughlin, please. I have a Charles Dickens book and there is an inscription in it that reads as follows. Jack McLaughlin, St. Columbus College, Derry. Second prize high jump senior. Height 5'1" or 5'2". The 11th of the 6th, 1918. I wrote to the college in Derry last year, but got no reply. I would love to return it to a relation of his, as it's over 100 years old and maybe they would like to have it as a keepsake for the family. The name of the book is Martin Chuzzlewit. I'm writing this by hand because I don't use email. So that's you, Tom.
Yeah.
I was just looking up the book. It was called, when it was published in 1842, The Life and Adventures of Martin Chuzzlewit.
1842?
It was first published in 1842.
First published, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Where did you get it from?
Well, my daughter got it about 2 years ago at a book sale. There was a fair in Skerries. She lives in Skerries.
Right.
And she got it at a book sale in a box of books. And she had it in her car. She had it in the house for a while. And she was clearing stuff out. And she looked at the book and she realised, well, yeah, you know, it's not, you couldn't throw it out or give it to somebody else.
Yeah.
So she passed it on to me.
Right.
With the idea that I would research her, do a little bit of research and try and find the relation of Jack McLaughlin, because it's a sentimental piece,
yes.
I think.
Yeah, it is. No, you're right, you're right.
I think it's an historic family thing, if the family would be interested.
Yeah.
And I'm a little bit into that sort of stuff, you know, about sentimental stuff.
Do you have keepsakes yourself?
Well, I have a few little keepsakes. I have my grandfather's, my grandfather's prayer book, an old prayer book belonged to my grandfather, with his name and address inside it.
Right.
And I have my own father's first communion book.
Right.
That
right.
he got from his mother.
Yeah.
In 1923.
Yeah. Right. Lovely.
But little various other little items, you know.
So,
but I believe in that sort of stuff, you know.
So he got this Jack McLaughlin guy got a second prize in the high jump. And the height, I'd imagine, is the height of the jump as opposed to his height.
I imagine it's a high jump.
Yeah.
5'2". Yeah. As long as we're not for the high jump, say, right, we're all right.
Yeah. And it was. He got it on the 11th of the 6th, 1918.
That's the date it's written on it. Yeah.
Now, it's St. Columbs. Is it?
Columbs.
Columbs. Yeah.
C-O-L-U-M-B-S.
Yes.
Columbs.
It was named after St. Columba.
Yeah.
And it's a famous college up there, and like when you list off the past pupils, like you're talking John Hume,
yeah.
Phil Coulter,
yeah.
Seamus Heaney,
yeah,
And the list goes on and on and on. There's more people there, but I can't remember them off the top of my head.
Yeah. Anyway, famous people there. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So it's a famous school up there in Derry, St. Columb's. Jack McLaughlin.
Yeah,
so he would, if it was 1918, then he would have been a teenager. So he was born sometime in the 1902 or 1903 or 1904.
Well, the early 1900s.
Yeah.
He was in the senior school.
Yeah.
Senior high jump.
So if I'm just thinking now, if he, say, as they did, people got married and had children younger back then, he could have had that done by, he could have had children by 1930.
So I would imagine so.
They'd be 90 now if they were still alive.
They'd be in their age, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And then if they the had next, they the had children, generation. Next generation, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's just, yeah.
Yeah, it's fascinating, though, even just to have this little chat, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a long shot, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But there's another signature on the very first page, and it's M. Bradley. Now, I don't know why that's written there.
Right, M. Bradley.
M. Bradley.
And it's a signature, is it? Is it?
No, it's a signature.
Yeah, and is it in the same handwriting as the Jack McLaughlin?
No, it's different.
It's different, right.
No,
okay.
I imagine Jack McLaughlin wrote this in himself.
Do you think so? Yeah.
Well, I don't know. Maybe he didn't. I'm just surmising.
But does it look like this is a ridiculous question, Tom, but does it look like a teenager's handwriting?
No.
You see, there you go.
No, well then, there you go.
Yeah, I'd say it was written in by a teacher.
Could be, it's good writing, yeah. Yeah.
I don't know how I'd feel if I got a Charles Dickens book as a prize in a high jump myself.
I know.
How would you feel?
I don't know. Right?
Yeah.
I've never had a Charles Dickens book in my life.
Well, you do. You have one in your.
I have now. And a little bit of history.
Yeah, and you want to pass it on. You want to pass it on.
Well, I would love to pass it on.
Okay.
If I could find some relative of his.
Okay. So we'll read the important bits of information there again. It's Charles Dickens' novel, The Life and Adventures of Martin Chuzzlewit.
Yeah.
And the inscription reads, Jack McLaughlin, St. Columb's College, Derry.
Yeah.
Second prize, high jump senior, height 5'2", the 11th of the 6th, 1918. So it would have been, as a lot of schools still have, the sports day at the end of the year.
Before
they break up for summer holidays. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, so we'll throw it out there. Yeah. McLaughlin, L-O-U-G-H-L-I-N, is that
That's it, yeah.
That's the way it's spelled, okay.
Sorry, Ray, could I just make a request, please?
Yeah, of course you can.
Well, it's my darling wife's birthday tomorrow.
Ah, great. Yeah,
I wish her a very happy birthday. And I'd love to publicly thank my own family, our children, and our lovely grandchildren for all the support and love and the strength that they gave us through the lockdown. We would have been lost without them.
Ah, that's lovely, Tom.
Absolutely brilliant support we got from every single one of them.
And what's your wife's name?
Maureen.
Party
tomorrow, yeah.
Ah, yeah. Tom and Maureen Hand would like to thank all their family for all their support during lockdown. And how are you going to celebrate Maureen's birthday, Tom?
Very hard to celebrate now. It'll be quite a fair.
Be quite, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, it'll be quite.
I think this gesture is a lovely birthday present, even to.
Well, I would just love to.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
And she's going to kill me for this. I fell in love with her all over again during the lockdown.
But that's not. That's not good. You're a keeper, Tom. You're a keeper.
She'll kill me. She'll hang me out to dry for that one.
Mind yourself. We'll be in touch if we get any leads on that. Thanks, Tom.
Thanks, Ray, very
lovely
much.
Lovely talking
Thank
to you.
You.
Okay, see you. Bye. Anish Toshin and the Free Skeleton in Oaktala, Maura Breed ni Coolon. Gurmagad Maura Breed, thank you very much. 51551 RadRT.ie. Just listen to your comments at the outset of the programme, and I never realised that I actually do all those safety precautions that you mentioned. It's ingrained in us as women that we are not safe and we do these precautions without even thinking. We need to change this mantra, and I applaud this previous listener who has asked for men to also be vigilant on our behalf. As a college student, I was followed into a bathroom in a remote part of the campus during the day. It was a terrifying experience. I just ran past the man and outside to my friend waiting. No place, day or night, is necessarily safe, says that person. And it's worth carrying a personal alarm. They can be clipped onto bags, etc. I think
Some can be worn like a watch. They emit a very loud siren when you pull a cord or press a button. I think anyone, male or female, walking alone should wear one. Get into the habit of taking it with you, like your phone, when leaving the house. They are not expensive and good deals are got with multi-buys. It's terrible that you would have to wear an alarm, isn't it? One thing men can do is to openly call out other men who pass derogatory comments about women. Instead of casually saying, leave it out, why not say out loud, that's very disrespectful and I would ask you not to speak that way about a female again in my company. Embarrassment causes people to rethink. If there's no consequence for bad behaviour, the behaviour just continues, says Marie in Dublin. And listening to you brought to mind an instance that happened to me in New York some years ago. I fell asleep on the bus and at the last stop, the bus driver woke me. It was known as a bad area and he didn't want me to get off the bus. He was so caring and even though he admitted he could lose his job for this, he drove me to my door with the bus. My friend, the owner of the house, was a cop and could not believe his eyes when he saw the red line bus pull up outside the house. There are some wonderful men out there too, as we all know. My one regret in life is I never got his name to thank him. That's Deborah there. And I have to say, in response to one of your emails, that it's not the mothers of men who need to teach their sons respect for women, but it's their fathers that should show by example how to treat women respectfully. And that's Claire in Limerick. Well, a bit of both, I suppose, Claire. Could you please wish my sister Helen Ramsden a very happy birthday today in Dublin? We all miss each other. Love from her sister Sinead, Marie, Adrian and all the families. And can you wish happy birthday to our friend of 32 years, Geraldine Hanley? She was one of the amazing people who got her short story into your book. We are so proud of her. Also remembering her angel Owen, whose birthday is tomorrow, and our angels John and Keith, who brought us all together. So there's a big story there. And that's from Kathleen and Della. And happy birthday to Geraldine again. Now, it's time for our quiz of today. Today, the 11th of March, 10 questions on events that happened on this day. And a big prize, yes, courtesy of Electric Ireland, who are launching their new smart meter price plans, helping you manage your electricity usage for the better. And you can search Electric Ireland smart meters to find out more about these meters. And thanks to Electric Ireland, they've given us a brand new 50-inch HD smart TV as a prize every day this week. Donal O'Leary, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Ray.
In Cork City.
That's correct, Ballinlough in Cork.
Yeah, so it's the, you know, the year anniversary today, tomorrow, whichever way you look at it.
Monday
for you, right, Monday, yes. For you. So you're a publican.
That's right.
And how many days have you been open in the last year?
Fully open, I say about 21 days.
Right.
And that was September, about 21st or thereabouts September to early October.
Okay. How are you finding it? How are you bearing up?
Doing our best. What can I say? It is what it is. Please God, there's light in the tunnel coming shortly.
Yeah.
There's a lot worse out there than us.
Yeah.
Right, but I do feel sometimes that the hospitality industry in general has been neglected by the powers that be in government, and we've been treated as being totally disposable.
And you've been a publican 28 years.
Yeah, going into 29 years this September.
And the business, it's the Pierhead Inn, I see, in Blackrock.
That's right.
Yeah, you're confident that it'll survive this, though.
Oh yeah, yeah, without doubt. We're lucky where we're located. We're on proverbial a greenway within the city,
uh-huh.
Down by the marina, Parky Cave, walk down past Blackrock Castle, head towards Rochetown around.
Yeah.
We're very lucky with the footfall passing
yes,
our door.
Yeah, yeah. And you're on cooking duty this evening.
I was. Yes.
Oh, you were. Oh, you did. It's done.
Well, no,
is it?
It's prepped.
It's prepped. Excuse me. Oh, look at you. Look at you. It's prepped. Right. So, what's on the menu?
Pork stir fry.
Right. So, what sort of pork would you get? Would you get a loin of pork, and what would you?
Actually, lamb chops. Oh, sorry, pork chops.
Oh, you get pork chops and just cut them up.
Cut them up from the Collins Meats and English Market.
Right. Right.
The man in general there, Paul Murphy, he's a fourth generation butcher there, and he'd be a good customer of mine. Well, would have been up to last March.
Yes, yeah. Are you peppers with it, onions? No, what have you got with
it? You know, there's carrots, peppers, onions,
yeah.
Parsnip mushrooms.
Parsnips?
Well, yes.
In a stir fry?
Yes, no, they were very cut, very thin.
Right.
Now, they're my own parsnips.
Right, and is there garlic, ginger, soy sauce?
Garlic, ginger in the marinade.
Yeah, yeah, right. Nice.
And a bit of soy sauce, a bit of olive oil.
Right, and rice.
And five spice.
And rice, right. I'm drooling here, Donald. I want a bit of that.
You're more than welcome.
And who's going to enjoy that with you this evening?
My wife Susan and my two sons Brian and Mark, hopefully.
Right, and your Susan is working from home.
She is. She's working today, actually. She's job shares.
Right.
And worked from home and has been since the pandemic.
Right. And what about the two lads?
One is teaching. He's a year's contract teaching, secondary school teaching. And the other lad is last year in college, Mark, his fourth year in college.
Right.
So he's stuck in his room for the last while, constantly studying and preparing for exams and assignments.
Right. Aren't they lucky to have you there preparing a pork stir fry?
Well, it's something to do anyway.
Yeah, it is. You're up against Pauline Johnston from Celebridge in Kildare. How are you doing, Pauline?
I'm great, Ray. Thank you very much.
Who's on cooking duty in your house this evening?
So he is on cooking duty in our house.
Right. He's your other half.
He's the other half, Monday to Friday.
Right. And what's he cooking for this evening?
What's he cooking for this evening? This evening we're having baked potatoes. Oh, I'm actually having salmon.
Right.
They're having steak. I don't eat steak, so I'm having salmon.
Okay.
And potato wedges.
Nice, nice. And I believe he's a bit of a genius in the kitchen.
He is. He's brilliant in the kitchen, I have to say. He's fantastic. He makes a dinner out of anything and he can make it all look fabulous. So leave it to the experts. Do you know what I mean?
I believe his sambos are something to behold. They're as good as what you'd get in Donald's pub.
As good as you get in any pub or any restaurant, I have to say. But it's not good for your waistline. That's the only thing. So you have to do a lot of walking.
Yeah.
Because every time I turn around, I'm walking at home, and every time I turn around, I'm getting fed.
Right.
Which is not good. It is good, but it's not good.
Yeah. Who else is at home?
Davina is at home as well.
Right.
Well, she's actually working. She works down in Naas.
Right. And is there any other members of the family away from the house?
There is. I have a daughter, Kerry, who lives in Scotland. She's in Aberdeen.
Right.
She's a physiotherapist over there. So she's been working on the front line through the whole pandemic. Can't wait to see her.
And has she been vaccinated? She has.
She's actually had her second dose.
Right. That's great news for you, isn't it?
Wonderful.
It's reassuring, yeah.
It's absolutely wonderful.
Yeah. Okay, we have this big telly to give away to one of you. Five questions each. Whoever answers most correctly gets the prize. If it's a draw at the end of the five questions, we go to a tie break. Good luck, Donal in Cork and Pauline in Selbridge. Here we go.
Good luck, Donal.
Good luck, Pauline.
Okay, Donal, first question for you. On this day in 2006, Michelle Bachelet was inaugurated as the first female president of Chile. On what continent would you find Chile?
South America.
Correct answer. Pauline, on this day in 1990, Lithuania declared its independence. On what continent would you find Lithuania?
What continent would I find Lithuania?
Yeah.
Europe?
Yeah, Europe is correct answer, yeah. Okay. It wasn't a trick question. Now, Donald, your second question is an audio one. Have a listen to this. On this day in 1964, Shane Ritchie, British actor, was born in Harlesden, London. He played Alfie Moon in that TV soap. Can you name it?
EastEnders.
Yeah, correct answer. And for you, Pauline, your audio question. Have a listen to this.
I think this is wonderful with chilli, either in it or like Tabasco dripped on top afterwards. Now, I'll just kind of show the sandwich to the milk because this bread is really absorbent and you don't want a kind of liquid sludge.
On this day in 1932, Nigel Lawson, former UK Chancellor of the Exchequer, was born. You heard his daughter there, who is a famous cook and food writer. Can you name her?
Nigella.
Yeah, that was pretty easy, wasn't it?
Donald,
yes? Question number three for you. On this day in 1851, composer Giuseppe Verdi's opera Rigoletto premiered. What nationality was Giuseppe Verdi? Was he Italian or French?
Italian.
Yeah, correct answer. Pauline, your third question. On this day in 1968, composer Dmitri Shostakovich completed his 12-string quartet. What nationality was Dmitri Shostakovich? German or Russian?
Shostakovich, I say Russian.
Yeah, you say right. That's correct. Three all. As we're on to question number four, it's another audio one. Donald, have a listen to this. That song was number one on this day in 1978. Can you name the singer?
Kate Bush, Wuthering Heights.
Yes, very good. Great song. A classic, as they say.
Yes.
And for you, Pauline, have a listen.
Tragedy.
Number one in 1979. Can you name the group?
1979.
Any idea?
Bee
Gees. Yeah, Bee Gees, yeah, correct.
You know what, I'm taking steps. I guess they know someone else before them.
Yes, they did a version, but they were probably just about born in 1979. Maybe they were. Bee Gees, the original there of Tragedy. It's 4-4. It's down to the wire. Donal and Cork and Pauline and Selbridge. So, Donal, good luck with this. Get it right and you put Pauline under a bit of pressure to get her final question correct as well. So here it is. On this day in 1935, the Bank of Canada opened its first branch in Ottawa. Which of these countries has a larger population than Canada? Okay, which of these countries has a larger population than Canada? Argentina, Saudi Arabia, or Cameroon?
Argentina.
Well, you said it quickly and with confidence, and it's the correct answer. Yes, Argentina has 45 million, Canada has 37, and just for your information, Saudi Arabia 34 and Cameroon 26 million. Right, similar question for you, Pauline. Get it right and we're down to a tie-break situation. On this day in 1922, José Luis López, celebrated Spanish actor, director and comedian, was born in Madrid, Spain. What we want to know is, which of these countries has a larger population than Spain? Ukraine, Iraq or Vietnam?
Vietnam.
Yeah, said quickly and with confidence and is correct, yeah. Vietnam has 97 million, Spain has 46 million and then Ukraine 43, Iraq 40. So you're both of you are very good. Congratulations on answering all questions correctly. Unfortunately, we only have one TV to give away, so we're down to a tie-break situation.
Donal will split the screen.
Do a timeshare on it. Okay, so we asked you this question before we went on air, and you've given us your guesses, so if you could remember those there while I'm asking the question, it would be great. On this day in 1929, Erskine B. Childers, writer and diplomat, was born in Dublin. According to Google Maps, how long would it take to walk from the GPO in Dublin to Naas in County Kildare? Okay, how long would it take to walk from the GPO in Dublin, Naas in County Kildare? We wanted your answer in hours and minutes.
Yeah.
So, Donal, can you remember what you said?
I think I said 4 hours.
You did say four hours. It's 33 kilometres now.
Right.
I said 4 hours. And Pauline has a little bit of an advantage in that she's from the county of Kildare.
Yes.
And what did you say? Can you remember, Pauline?
I said 5 hours, 30 minutes on a very fast walk.
It's okay. Well, I can tell you that the correct answer is 6 hours and 45 minutes, which means that, Pauline, you're closest to the correct answer. Hard luck,
well,
Donal.
Thank you. Sorry, Donal.
Yeah, I'm sorry as well, Donal. I don't like when it goes to that, but that's the new one.
Donal, I'll come to your pub as soon as it's open, I promise.
Yes, hopefully now, during the summer.
Yeah, Pierhead Inn there, down in Blackrock and Cork.
Thank you, Ray.
There you go. Pauline will be down there during the summer.
And you're more than welcome yourself as well,
Thank
Ray.
You very much, Donal. And stay safe, mind yourself, and enjoy the pork stir fry.
You too. Thank
right,
you.
See you now. Bye. Well done, Pauline.
Thank you so much, Ray. That's brilliant.
Yeah, and could the house benefit from a new 50-inch HD smart TV?
Absolutely it will. Absolutely.
Brilliant.
Our television is actually nearly on the way out, so we really need it. And my daughter in Aberdeen, she's just in the process of buying her apartment by herself, so I was hoping to give her the money to buy a TV. So hopefully in the summer, if we can go over in the car, we could lung it in and...
There you go. Win.
From Ray Darcy to Kerry.
Kerry in Scotland.
In Aberdeen.
Yeah. Okay. Great talking to you, Pauline. Well done. Congratulations. Mind yourself. See. Bye.
Thanks a million, Ray.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Next Wednesday is St. Patrick's Day and we're gearing up for our national day. We're joined now on the line by Mancon McGann. And Mancon is here to tell us about his search for Irish words from the coastal areas of Ireland. How are you doing, Mancon?
Very good indeed, Ray. Lovely to talk to you.
Great to talk to you again as well. The last time we were talking, you were saying, I'm not going to fly anywhere anymore, Ray.
That was exactly what last February, a year ago, I was taking this big principal stand and I expected everyone to feel sorry for me.
Yeah.
And then everyone stopped. They followed me.
It was like the world. It's like nature said, oh yeah, we'll help you out with that, Mancon.
Exactly. But I did have great plans to be taking trains all over Europe and obviously that ended as well.
Yeah. So how have you been during lockdown? You had the congratulations on the success of your book, 32 Words for Field.
Yeah, that was a lovely surprise. I just settled down here in Westmeath and started growing more vegetables and keeping more hens and then keeping turkeys for Christmas. and like swim in a wee little lake. But it was a lovely surprise halfway through to have a book, as you say, about the Irish language, which should have just been a nice slow seller for a few years, just catch people's attention and sell way more copies and way more like editions than I thought.
What do you reckon is people's favourite word for a field, or is there one, or what's yours?
I suppose, I don't know, one word I love is quiverin, and quiverin means a field that's worked in partnership with your neighbours.
Right.
So it requires a whole social system where you share the plough team, you share the seeds, you share the labour. I love that.
Yeah, and that brings us nicely on, because like the Irish language, one word can say so much. It's a very rich language, isn't it?
I mean, you know, people complain a bit about the language because it's a complicated language. But that's because it's a language that's been going for like 2,500 years, maybe 3,000 years, with some elements of it maybe going back way longer than that. And so it's almost like DNA in a tree. You know, they say a tree and a really old species like a woodlouse have all these extra genetic complexities in them just because they've lived longer. So the modern languages that we're used to in Europe, like French and German and English, they're very different from those ancient languages like Hebrew, like Sanskrit, and like Irish, which has its roots in them.
Give them the stats there. You know, on average, what your average person would use, the number of words in English compared to the number of words in Irish.
Yeah, well, a few years ago, I did a project called Gaelga Tamagotchi, and I was just looking, finding these rare words that people were forgetting. And it was words to describe someone's character in Irish. Mm. And there's 4,300 words in Irish just to describe someone's character, like what I was called when I was young, Plubbera, which is basically fatso.
Right.
All of these words in a non-PC age. It was the 1970s, you know. But all these words. And so that's 4,300 words to describe someone's character. In English, most speakers have about 12,000 words in their entire vocabulary. And Shakespeare used 30,000 words in his entire literary oeuvre.
Right.
So, like, Irish is just off the charts in the amount of different terms for very specific things.
Isn't that's brilliant. Yeah, I'd love to you to give me a word for me. No, don't. So, the Tamagotchi thing, just explain the relevance of that. So,
do you remember in the 1990s, there were these little digital toys, digital Tamagotchis, and you had to, it was a little toy, and you had to feed it by pressing buttons and change its nappy and keep it alive by nourishing and nurturing it.
Right.
So I thought, how about if I give a word to people and do the same, get them to love it and nourish it and do nice things with it.
Right.
And the idea took off.
An Irish word, yeah.
Exactly.
Just before we get to the words that you've collected from, you know, down the West Coast to describe various things that happen in our seas, what do you feel about the state of the language at the moment?
I have to say, I'm positive, but I'm biased. Like, so I had a book come out, as you said, that was meant to sell, you know, whatever, 2,000 copies over a year and a half, and it's in its sixth edition.
Right.
So something has happened during COVID. We seem to be swimming more in the lakes and rivers and the seas, and we seem to be going back to nature, going back to that interest in our heritage and our culture.
Yeah.
So if you were to ask me what I thought about that rich, rich, complex Irish that's in the Gaeltacht and the future of that, there's great steps of positivity from that, but that's more perilous. But the idea of people being slightly less biased against the Irish in urban centres, that seems to be shifting. People seem to accept it.
If tomorrow I waved a wand and I made Manchán McGann Minister for the Irish Language, what was the first thing you'd do?
Yeah, so, I mean, the reason I wrote the book and the reason I did this little sort of show, Greg, at Sea Tamagotchi, because I think we always look at the language in the wrong way. We look at it as though it's a school problem or a government problem. I think it's something deeper. Irish people all around the world need to connect with their landscape, need to connect with their heritage, because that's the way forward. Otherwise, you feel isolated, you feel depressed, you feel cut off from who you are. And so, some way, I would be trying to get people back to engage with the land, back to engage with their history, back to engage with their own bodies. And coming from that, naturally, the language will arise out of it because it's linked to all those things.
Yeah, like I found very positive last year was the number of people who had to holiday at home. People who would automatically just have driven to Cork Airport or Dublin Airport and got on a plane and gone wherever. But they had to discover parts of Ireland that they'd never discovered before.
Yeah.
And they were actually, I'm not surprised, you know, they were pleasantly surprised.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not surprised that they were pleasantly surprised because I know and I love, you know, holidaying in Ireland. And similarly with the language, I think that's part of what happened as well. As you described it a lot more eloquently than I did. Okay, so see Tamagotchi. So you interviewed people.
Yeah, so as part of Galway 2020, last year's big celebration of culture, I set off all along the coast of Donegal, of Mayo, of Galway, just going to the fishermen and the folklorists and collecting up the words from them. And some of these words, they said they hadn't said for like 40 or 50 years. Like a word like muirlu. And muirlu is the practice of getting the little green crabs that we used to collect as kids, chewing them up in your mouth and spitting them into the sea to act as a bait for the fish. It's going to come to your net.
Bultog. I like that one.
Oh, bultog is great. Bultog is a shaft or a ray of light that's on the wrong side of the sun, and it's a sign of bad weather approaching. So a lot of these, as well as being beautiful words, had practical insights to them as well.
And a crewbog.
A crewbog is great. A crewbog is when a stroke of the oar digs too deep in into the water and it swivels back and it comes and hits you and can kick you out of the of your rowing bench. In fact, can throw you into the water.
Isn't it brilliant that there's a word for that?
It's so good, yeah.
And you could hear people having the conversation in the pub that night that your man suffered at the hands of a crewbog, or whatever way you'd say it, yeah.
Biggest embarrassment, yeah. To be kicked out of the boat by your own oar.
Pat Murphy from Mullet Peninsula, tell us about him.
So Pat Murphy, since the 1960s, he's been collecting, he's just a folklorist, a fisherman, a seaman out on the Mullet Peninsula. He's been collecting sea words from his neighbours, collecting the ancient prayers that go with it, collecting words like cablu, which is the spirit voices that are heard in the distance at sea on calm nights. And he's been recording them on reel-to-reel tapes. And I turned up, he's got a visitor centre there, Trust Shear, out beyond Belmullet. I turned up and these beautiful concepts and words kept spilling out of his mouth. That were all alive at one time in the Mayo Gaeltacht. And, you know, the Mayo Gaeltacht of all is a very frail one. All of these words are being forgotten.
Okay, Gunnar Seta, let's hear what he has to say about that.
Right. Along the shore, you would get Gunnar Seta, blowing sand. Blown. It's been blown by the wind. It's the grass and the land has dried away from it, or eaten away from it, so there's only the sand left. But it's blown by the wind, and it's loose.
Loose sand, blown on the beach.
And he said that what they used to do, they'd gather up this very fine loose sand and they'd put it on the flagstones of the cottages. And if there was a dance, if there was after Banish and Sogart, which was when the priests would come to bless the house, they'd do a dance around on the flagstones and the sand would rise up. And they called this Rinkin the Ginnin, the dance of the rabbits, because all the sand would rise up in the air, this fine sand.
Okay, so you see Tamagotchi, it's a project for Galway 2020. It's like most things now, it's gone virtual. So where can people see it on St. Patrick's Day?
Yeah, so for St. Patrick's Festival, they've paid me to make little videos of some of the words by Pat Murphy and by other of the fishermen and the folklorists I met. And so they're going to air them on SPTV, which is St. Patrick's Day, St. Patrick's Festival television, which runs for the next, you know, from Sunday for the next for a few days. And that's going to be on Sunday at 4 p.m. on SPTV, and then on Monday at 6 p.m., Monday the 15th.
Great.
And they'll be on RTE.ie, the culture page. They'll be on the Oireachtas channel and on on the St. Patrick's Day Festival website, which will have just amazing programming for the 12th to the 17th of March.
Mankan, Gurmagud.
Fighter up.
Thank you very much. Well. That's it from us. Cormac and Sarah on the way. We are back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Thursday evening.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.